Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Beat, presented by BetMGM, the exclusive betting partner of The Athletic. Sign up at BetMGM.com using that promo, The Athletic Pod, for all the great stuff. I'm, of course, Nick Bumgarner, along with Brendan Quinn here in frigid Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Ferndale, Michigan, of course. podcasting live. How are we doing, man?
I am fantastic. How are you, Nick?
Cold. It's very cold. I actually saw that Mike Mulholland tweeted a couple minutes ago, and I agreed, that if it's going to be this cold out, then there should probably be some snow on the ground or something. Like, if it's going to be
something
to where I'm like, my bones hurt when I go outside, then
some level of redeeming quality.
Something's got to be. Yeah, we got to be able to use it, right? Like, I mean, but we're not being able to use it right now. It kind of sucks. So anyway, other than that, how are we doing?
I'm good. I have to start off with an apology. So I went back and re-listened to it, and the very echoey on my part.
Oh, it was? Okay.
New office situation.
Yes, that's right.
It sounded like I was in a pipe.
Well, you hadn't had your I don't think you had your like pictures and stuff hung up on the wall yet, so it was probably just like
I got nothing.
Yeah, so it was probably just banging around the sound. That's true. Yeah. Well, did you get that fixed? Well, you sound better now. Well, you didn't. You sounded fine to me, I guess, last time. We'll see.
Yeah. Now, well, now I'm just in. Now I'm in the living room, so we'll see if this is better.
Yeah, that's. So, yeah, I mean, you got, as long as there's like stuff in there to, I think that's how it works, right?
But yeah, right now the office is just four bare walls and a hardwood floor.
So it's not going to be great.
Desk, empty bookshelves. Yeah. So
it's not going
to
be great.
Yeah. So apologize to anyone who had to suffer through that, because I'm sure that was a spicy episode with all the Harbaugh takes. So they were listening to you, and then I would just come chiming in from my pipe, echoing down the street. So, yes.
All the Harbaugh takes. Well, we've had more Harbaugh takes in the recent days since we've recorded. So, I guess.
Are you having fun with it?
No, not really. I mean, I'm about done with it, to be honest. But it's also like, you know, Austin and I wrote our thing yesterday or whatever day it was. And what's today? Thursday? Yeah. And,
yeah.
You know, I was like, look, at this point, I don't know what else is left to speculate about. You know, it's like, it's just going to be whether he gets an offer and takes it, you know? And it's like, so, yeah. I mean, well, I've known that the whole time. I mean, like, I guess for me, it was more like, yeah, it's not fun because these are hard stories to write because so much of it is rumor and so much of it is trying to cut through all that. And everyone has a hard time with that because especially when you have a coach like this who just, he lets these things go this way for his benefit. And, you know, I think that's a bit of what's happening as well. So it's been, you know, it's hard to find time, the right windows to write stuff like this, but whatever,
I was at the Michigan game on Tuesday, whatever the hell that was, Maryland.
Yeah, I did watch some of that on TV.
Yeah, I went to actually see Maryland because I'm working on a story on the program for next week. They are not good.
Not a good day for Maryland.
But
on their way up, though, let's hope. We'll see.
We'll see. I was talking to Gary Williams this morning. That was cool.
We'll see, he says. Jesus. Okay, maybe not. Yeah, right. Never mind.
But I just saw Austin. You know, I sat a couple seats down from Austin.
Mm-hmm. It's just he didn't look so good.
That cold, dead look. I was like, I know that look. That's not a good look. Just when you're just...
Yeah, we were in it. Tuesday was a long day.
Yeah, knee deep into swirls is that's not fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, these stories are just these carousel stories, and there's some people that do them for like this is their job, and that's so they're more used to it, I'm sure. But like for a lot of us, it's like it's the thing that whenever a coach gets hired, you know that you're gonna have to cover him getting fired or leaving too.
Yes,
and you're gonna have to do it again, and it's just like it's so hard. They're so like, I've come away from, I don't see them as hard anymore in the way of, like, I think I'm equipped to handle them. But, like, they're very challenging and, like, stressful in ways that nothing else is. Because it's just, like,
right.
A lot of times we have conversations internally, you know, about, like, what we can and can't report. And those are hard, you know. Like, those are not easy to do. And especially at a place like this, Jesus. I mean, we have so many people here that know so many things and... But, you know, it's just tough. I mean, like, look, we have all these people that, like, I was talking to Vic Taffer earlier this week, who has covered the Raiders for a long, long time and knows Raiders better than everybody. It's like, what the fuck? I don't... And, like, he's saying the same thing. And I'm like, hey, you know, like, we'll see what happens. And he's like, yeah. I mean, he knows... And Vic knows Jim. I mean, he remembers him from when he was in the Bay Area there with the Raiders and in San Francisco. So it's like, you know, I think a lot of people here understand the central character of the play. And he's a hard one to wrap up. So that's, but hey, it's his world, man. We're all just living in it, apparently, as we still are here 7 years later. But on we go.
But you had some good reporting there. And I know we just took a bunch of questions this week and we'll fire through them. We got some good ones about arenas and sandwiches, which I like.
Hey, there we go.
But, you know, of course,
before we get to the sandwiches, we have a few
about Harbs and the story that you guys wrote and some of the reporting that you put in there. You know, I mean, you had a source right there just saying, you know, a lot of people have gotten this kind of wrong on between the NIL speculation that it's this giant sticking point. Which, you know, seems at best overblown, at worst false.
Yeah, so. That's a great way to put it. Jesus. I mean, it's interesting, right? Not to get too deep into the weeds here, but we sometimes do that. Like, and you mentioned Austin, you know, when we were talking about all this as we're putting it together, he actually had concerns about, like, are we going too deep into some of the NIL stuff? I was like, put it all in. All of it, because I was like, this is all important stuff that people need to read and hear and see, because I think that, you know, that source was, you know, I have a hard time disagreeing with that on all things I've heard from every other, you know, side of everything else, because it's just like, you know, there are things that are happening right now in that world that are fluid, uncertain, will end up being illegal soon. And, you know, there's the other side of it that we talked about on the show here last week, that you have to be careful in these deals that these kids end up in, you know, like they're, if you end up getting a deal with just anybody, or you let just anybody come in here, they can get taken. It's a really bad deal. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. And we know that Michigan, and that includes Jim Harbaugh, right? Like, wants to operate by the book with everything they do. And no, I mean, if you think that Jim Harbaugh's mad at Michigan over NIL, do you think that he wants them to cheat? Like, is that what if you think that Jim Harbaugh's walked in and said, Ward, I want you to start cheating, then I don't think you know anything about Jim Harbaugh. So that's not true at all. And the notion that he would leave Michigan because they don't want to do anything with NIL couldn't be further from the truth. It's the opposite, in fact. Like, they all agree that they can do better to max it out, like I think all schools would right now. But it's just a matter of, like, figuring out how to do that. I think that if they have any disagreement on NIL, it might be, like, in the weeds of how would we structure whatever this would look like. But I don't think that's just, like, you know, any disagreement you would have with a coworker on an office project or whatever. It's not a disagreement of, like, fundamental philosophical whatever. So that was important, I thought, for sure, that we got that in, because that's not what's going on here at all. Like, Harbaugh's all aboard the NIL train. Michigan's all aboard the NIL train. They want, if he's going to be here, if he's going to be in college coaching, he knows that he's going to have to be all aboard. I guess that's what I should say. If he's going to be in college coaching, he knows he's going to have to be all aboard the NIL train. I think he's probably still sort of maybe deciding whether or not he wants to be. But I think they all understand what has to happen there. And I think, you know, our reporting, and Austin did a lot of that too, did a good job, I think, of explaining that.
To me, some of the theories out there that this is the reason, this would be the sticking point that he would go, kind of just had very large whiffs of that belief that he would never leave Michigan.
Yeah.
Just choosing to leave Michigan.
He would never leave except if he decided he wanted a reason to leave.
Right. Like the convincing oneself of, like, well, there has to be something else. It has to be disagreements over NIL, you know, like it just seems like too convenient of a subject change.
It's like a beeline thing versus just the leverage, contract leverage.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's just like, nah, man. I mean, I don't know anything. You got the sources. I talk to you. You tell me what you hear, and that's what I go by.
It's similar to that. Yeah. In that sense.
But I think it's from where I'm standing, it looks like, look, the guy's going to want to go to the NFL or he's going to want to stay at Michigan.
That's the only thing at play here, yeah.
With the only caveat is whether he has an offer.
Right.
That's the caveat, right. Not Michigan concocting ways to keep him or him having giant sticking points of how the place is operating. I just don't...
I'll say this, too, because I did get a question just on Twitter before we started recording from someone who's... Uh-huh. It was a good question. Farrah and I talked and we had an exchange, like... That the impression of the numbers that we gave, the range there, which, the rework deal that they've talked about, and I haven't signed anything that I'm aware of. So this was all like hypotheticals that they've talked about, featured something in the 8 to 9 million range with incentives for a year that they just had. If you had a similar year to what you just had, that's what your pay would be. If you win the whole thing, the national title, you'd be in the 10 plus. Your whole take would be that. And it's my understanding that I don't think Harbaugh, and I don't know this, so I shouldn't say I don't think Harbaugh... It looks at those numbers and like laughs or scoffs. I think he sees them as like, okay, like that looks good. I really think it's more about, do I want to be in college or the NFL? That is, I think, what's happening here. It's not a us for, and that's why, and I wanted to bring this point up too, because last week I got a side question from Nezzy, a loyal listener and friend of the show, who was like, hey, okay, after we recorded, he was like, so how is all this doing damage to the program? How is Jim doing this or whatever doing damage to the program? And my answer to him, because I thought it was a good question, was like, it's the little stuff that happens and adds up over time. It's that uncertainty that layers throughout whatever. We don't even know if he has an offer. No one really knows if he has an offer. The longer this goes on, the more uncertainty will turn into like anger. And anxiety and angst and like bad feelings on sides that don't need to have bad feelings. That's what happens when you don't tell people that you're working with what you're doing. You just expect them to just go about their day like it's not, like their life path isn't sort of in your hands here, right? Like that's the kind of thing that, he has his right to do all this and obviously he does, but like that's just part of doing business too, I suppose. I'm not saying that I blame anybody one way or the other for it, but I mean, it is doing damage to the program. It does damage every single time. And I stand by my point last week that if Jim is back here, then this can't happen again. Like, and if he's not, then whatever. But like, if he's back here enough, like it's how many times? I mean, I'm all for everybody taking a shot at it, but it's like, look, dude, like I don't see people banging down the door here. I don't see offers shooting out the wazoo. And Austin and I reported in that story just the other day, if he has an interview, he has to disclose it, the word manual, or they can fire him for cause. I have no belief in my mind or have been told that word manual has any plan to put that whatever into action, that he would ever actually do that. But the fact that they wrote that into the contract, I think should tell you a lot about how all of this goes. It is not a one-way street. It is not a Michigan isn't doing enough. It's not that at all. It's one person thinking about his future and the way that he does it. And it's a challenging thing to deal with, I think.
So that stipulation wasn't in his first deal?
Not that I know of, no. I mean, I think that was new. I think that was, to my understanding, that's the first time I've seen that. And I told, like, I told Austin,
not
I said,
a coincidence.
No. And I told Austin, I said, that's about the most Michigan clause I've ever seen in a contract, to be quite honest. Cause I, and Harbaugh's had some really clever ones written into assistant contracts over the years. If you remember, like, I think you'd stopped kind of following around football by the time these all started coming out, but there would be the ones where like, if you left for school A, B or C, it was okay. But if you, this is for like receivers coaches, but if you left for anything else, it was like, you have to pay us 80 grand or something. Like, it wasn't a lot. It was like something like that. But like, it was, that's Harbaugh. That's, he's such a like nerd about the legal stuff. Like, oh, I just thought that was perfect. That was in the contract. Mm-hmm. Not that Ward would do that, but I also think that Jim probably saw that in the contract, was like, it was probably like, okay, you motherfucker, okay. Like, that was good. Like, you got me on that one, right? Like, that was my reaction to that. But, like, I think that that's sort of how I would explain this. Like, it's a, I mean, this is a negotiation and a competition, and this is a Jim Harbaugh. Everything's a competition, right? So that's right. How he views it. That's how he views it. That's what you're seeing.
So I think my big question, and I don't expect you to have a firm answer, it's more for a topic of conversation, but like my main question at this point is, how long does he let this go on for if it's, you know, the NFL coaching, this cycle isn't going to just magically wrap up in the next couple days. And if this goes on 5 days, 6 days, 10 days, you know, is he just going to sit there until the last job is filled? Or is it going to be, you know, when he knows the Raiders are off the board, the Bears are off the board, the Giants are off the board, and
I would think whatever. I would think that whenever the final, and I think that the Raiders is clearly the one that everyone looks at there, you know, that's when whatever he sees as his most whatever option to go to the league is closed, if in fact that happens and it's not, and he's not the head coach, then I think he'll sign the contract. And I think he won't say anything about it. And I think he'll go about his business. And I think that's what we will see. There won't be any kind of news conference. There won't be any kind of whatever. I'm sure they'll send a release out because, you know, you kind of have to probably at this point, right? Like, because it's been hanging like this, but.
Sure.
That'd be my guess, that he will either get an offer, go interview, take the job or not get an offer and just sign a deal, sign a new deal here and go about his business. But it's like, as we've talked about, there are things here that have to be, if he's back, there are things here that have to be mended. And there has to be a longer term plan for where the hell this whole thing is going, because clearly this guy has had a very deep thoughts about where he wants to be as a football coach. And he is 59 years old or 58 years old. And so if he's back, I would say that there needs to be deeper conversations about who takes the job when he's gone. Fair or not? Like, I think that's fair. Yeah. And so, I mean, you can't put yourself in position to have your most valuable asset just sort of being under control. You have no control over it. Unless you want to fire him, and they don't want to fire him. They want him to be their coach. So as far as I, you know, that's all evidence points to that, right? So like, it's up to him. It'll end when he wants it to end. And this is ultimately what he always wanted, to have the timeline on his watch. It'll end when I tell you it ends. Like, I think that's what he wants to go. And you know, look, again, like if he gets an offer, what Bruce wrote yesterday or whatever, could be true. I mean, you know, like that there are people that believe he would take it. You know, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. But I mean, we don't know that he has an offer. And if we don't know that he has an offer, that means, I'm telling you, Michigan doesn't know that he has an offer. At least Ward might and isn't telling anyone else. If that's the case, maybe that's the case, right? But I guess I would say, long story short, to on this rant would be, is I just don't think, and are there ill feelings there? Yes. We'd be foolish to think otherwise. But to a point where they're like, we can't work together? I don't think so. But also, I don't know. So, like, that's something, you know, we're like, we would have to see. And, you know, that's just not going to go away either, right? So, I don't know. But that's my understanding. They still want to be the coach. And he's still recruiting, man. I mean, like, he was out with guys yesterday. And he's got the staff recruiting. And he told them, like, I don't know if he's told them anything. I think it's just been like, your job is to coach for Michigan. So, go do it.
Right.
And I honestly, and those are the kind of guys Jim has hired. And I think it's a bit of a testament to that process and to the guys that are on staff. Because, look, if you're on staff right now, and all those guys just had a great season, all the guys on staff. But if you're on staff right now and all this is happening and you could keep this thing in the middle of the, and he does leave, well, shit. Somebody, you know, leader of the group might have a better case of telling Ward, we just won a Big Ten title.
Right.
10 of 11 of us are back.
Right.
You can go get Raiders season tickets if you want, but I'll sit here and see what we do. Like, I mean, like, that's kind of, I think, the approach that they're all taking. And, you know, Jim hiring Mike Elston last week. Mike Elston's a former player at Michigan, like, played here. That's as much to do with why he's here as anything else. If Jim left, I think Mike Elston would still be the defensive line coach here. Like, I think that's what would be the case. So, yeah, as we've talked about so many times, it's just not a normal situation, and it's not something that you can compare really to other spots. And people do that naturally in college football and football because there are a lot of comparables, and this is just not one of them. So, you know, it's hard for people, I think, to be reminded of that because we always go through this, right, where it's like, what is happening? And it's like, well, nothing more than doesn't happen every time. You know, it's just like, right? I mean, so we'll see. It's always we'll see. But I mean, hey, look, to Nezzy's point too, that when you're doing damage because the consistency just It doesn't, it's not, this isn't consistent, man. This is a stop and start and we'll see again. You're, what are we doing here? Like, that's the question that you have to be asking yourself. So
yeah,
you tell me.
I love the notion of, of Harbaugh kind of doing his own version of the Costanza of just, you know, still showing up at the office.
Well, he hasn't been fired.
I know, but
or
like,
he didn't quit or whatever.
Or like, you know, when this all blows over, there's just like a new deal around. Right, it's like just kind of showing up and just not acknowledging that any of this has happened or that anything is weird. Or
my favorite.
What are you looking at, man? I'm, you know, get back to work.
My favorite question with all this was, I kept getting people that were asking, they're like, do you think that Schlissel being gone will, now that Schlissel's out, Harbaugh will surely, I'm like, guys, if he didn't like Mark Schlissel, and I can promise you they had disagreements, he will treat the next president the exact same way. I don't care who it is. He will find reasons to combat with that person the same way he did with Mark Schlissel and the same way he does with every other person he's ever worked with or for. So, yeah. But that was a funny one. I thought that was good. Clearly, that has something to do with it. I'm like, no, that was just, I don't know what that was all about. I'm not an education writer, so I don't go into that realm of things.
Tremendous.
But yeah, man.
All right.
Crazy days.
Do you want to get into questions, or do you have anything else on your mind that you want to talk about?
I don't, you know, I think we're, I'm sure people had questions in there.
Yeah.
We can get into some of those, but I think that we're good to go on that.
You know, the next week, I think we're going to be we're going to talk some transfer portal. I've got a story dropping soon with Dana O'Neill and CJ Moore, and we are going to get into kind of some of the underbelly type stuff of what is happening in this new world of instant eligibility and the transfer portal. And another thing I want to talk to you next week about, Nick, is on Monday, I think it's running, unless I fuck it up or something else goes wrong.
I think I have
a story dropping on Maryland early next week, kind of a program piece.
Weird situation for them.
I want to get into, because they're kind of right at an inflection point of being a, you know, they can make the right hire and they can go right back to being Maryland basketball and it could be, you know, one of the best programs in the country. It can also just keep drifting the other way and it can become
lost.
one of those places that has had success in the modern era, knows what it looks like, has the fan base, and it just kind of
can't do it. Yeah.
Drifts
Minnesota
into the abyss.
Yeah. Illinois. Well, I guess Illinois is finding a way now, but yeah.
Illinois is bad, but Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
Wake Forest. Stanford. Stanford was the hot shit for 10 years. Gone. You know? So I want to talk to you about programs like that and just
What
dominoes fall when these things happen, and just
UCLA,
how delicate
the
balance of it all can be.
That'll be good.
Yeah, yeah. So that's next week, and we'll talk. We'll talk about Harbaugh either. You know, whatever, wherever the winds blow.
Hey,
we'll
if he's the Oakland Raiders coach, I'm not talking about him. How's that? If he's the coach of the Raiders, I've retired from the Harbaugh beat. Glad, you know, willingly or whatever.
You'll be asked to be on every podcast and radio station in the entire Vegas and Bay Area, because I'm sure they still got fans around there. But all right, Greg asked an important question.
All right,
directed at me.
Yeah,
if the Eagles are the one team you get to just be a fan of, Brendan.
Right.
Are the Eagles the one team you just get to be a fan of? And Nick, do you have a team like that? So here's my my answer to that. So when I was at a small paper in Philly, I covered the Eagles for 2 years as like the number two guy.
Yeah, you know? That's right.
I was the sidebar from the press conferences.
Sitting in the media room there. Oh, my God. All day. Yeah. Just that guy.
All day.
Wasting everyone's
all
time.
All day at the NovaCare complex, which is across the street from Lincoln Financial Field. And I did it. I did it fine.
Yeah.
You know, there was no, if anything, I would be too harsh on them just because that's kind of the way things are back home. But for me, the way I follow the Eagles, it's not only more than anything, more than being like the rah-rah fan. It's not like I have like a flag out. I'm not wearing gear all over town. It's, like, it's not. It's mainly my connection
to Philly.
Home.
Yeah.
And it's my group chat with, you know, whatever, 12, that's 15 really guys point, back home. 80% of the conversation is the Eagles.
Right.
You know, and really one of the few sports podcasts I listen to is Birds with Friends, which is
right, one of our shows. Yeah.
It's one of our shows with
Sheil and those guys.
Zach Berman and Sheil mm-hmm. and Bo Wolf, and it's terrific. And it's just like, yeah, I kind of use it as that one little outlet of, you know, thing I get to kind of have as, you know, fantasy land type stuff, you know, and it doesn't matter. There's zero chance I will ever cover the NFL again. I have no concerns of being like, what if I land on the Eagles beat? And people are like, didn't you tweet about the Eagles? Like, if anyone's hiring me for the Eagles beat, then they should be put out of business.
Probably not a good situation anyway. So,
That's actually a good point. It's just like a little slice
of
something I get to kind of share with my people.
I don't have that. I probably should. Mm-hmm. Like hockey would be a good one because I love hockey. Played some a little bit when I was a kid. Like not organized, but just as fun. But like that was always my like second favorite sport as a kid was hockey, and I'm not into that. But I could see for the same reason. Like the Red Wings were always my they were the team as a kid that I could not like. If they lost, you had to go take a walk or whatever when they were good, you know, in the 90s there. So when I see Steve Yzerman and those guys doing that stuff, and I don't watch them a lot. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I don't have time right now and anything else. I just don't. But like when I see, I saw they hired Lidstrom, you know, and I'm like, oh my God. Like those are the things that I'm like, well, no, I'll never. I just can't write about them. I don't think. Like those, that would be one that I would have a hard time maybe. And the Lions, I wondered about, and I don't. But because it was similar for me when I left home, you know, my Lions fandom was gone by the time I never really was. I liked Barry Sanders; that was my Lions fandom, really. But that was kind of gone when I left for college. When I left and moved away, and then you know was living, covering teams out of state. That's when I actually started to probably root for them more for the same reasons that you're saying with the Eagles. So. But yeah, maybe the Red Wings would be the team I would, but I don't watch them enough, so maybe I should.
Yeah, because even like a place because I do
they're also bad, basketball, so that doesn't help.
That does not help. because I, you know, my livelihood's in college basketball. Like even a place like St. Joe's,
right?
So my alma mater, a place that's very close to my family, you would never see me openly cheering for.
Right.
The
place.
Right. If I went home and went to a game, I would sit there. I would not wear the gear. I would, you know, sit in the stands. I would not get up and clap and cheer and yell and blah, blah, blah. That said, you know, when I was younger and
everyone would be just staring at you like, what are you doing? You miserable.
When I was younger and, you know, kind of less mature about this stuff and really kind of had harder edges on how this shit worked, I'd be like, you know, I don't even care. It doesn't matter. It's just another place. You know, I'm a goddamn journalist. I don't care about it. And like, that's just nonsense.
No,
like,
this is sports. You don't just get,
it's sports it's and you don't sports. Get to just unplug a part. You don't get to hypnotize yourself.
Right. Look,
and convince it's not like the place means a ton to me.
It means a ton to you. It also means that you'd never cover it.
There's a chance. There's certainly a chance, you know, the school ends up in the NCAA tournament, not anytime soon.
But they could end up in the NCAA
tournament one day.
And you have to do a story.
It comes across a team, and in that case, I'd be like, hey, I can write about it, but I have to acknowledge where I'm coming from. I'm not just going to go write about it and act as if I'm Brian Hamilton writing about St. Joe. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that doesn't work.
That's not the same thing, yeah.
But yeah, that said, you know, I can't be out there with the pom poms.
No.
You know what I mean? Working on behalf of or anything like that.
And that's what I would say is if you have a team like that you can't handle it with, then don't cover them, I guess, or whatever. But no, I do not have a football team that I have that with. Absolutely not. I've seen too much football in my day. I look at football so differently than everybody else.
Millington.
Yeah, Millington's probably it.
Go Cardinals.
because football has just been a fascination of mine since I was a kid, right? Like, just this weird little stuff. So I just, football to me is, it's competitive. I get that side, but it's not. I don't, that is not what turns me on with football, the competitive part. It's like the cool stuff that we see. That's what I like. That's not true, but the winner and loser, I guess, is always, it's just, if we see a good effort or a good whatever, something cool, I have a good time. So that's usually where I draw it. And it's been like that for me with football. If I think about it rationally, since I was a kid, like, that's always how I've watched football. So I am different with that. And I've acknowledged that over my life, that I try not to, I have tried in recent years not to tell fans how to think about things anymore, because I can't get into their head any more than they can't get into mine. You know, like, I get it to a degree, but I also don't, you know, like, there's part of me that's fascinated by them, the fans, right? That I think that in some ways they get fascinated by us. I think we're as fascinated by the fans a lot of the times for the same reasons that they're asking us about.
Right. Right.
Good question though.
All right. You got anything lined up?
My browser's down. So can you
get
the next
one? So we do have some hoops questions. Chris asks, regarding Michigan, where did the staff go wrong in their roster creation, or did they? How are they addressing their wing issue for the future? Seems like the team is just unbalanced, or am I reading this wrong?
Seems like they're just young to me, right?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it either this week or last week, that at some point, just in the evolution from the roster that was inherited and the older guys on that team to the last year's team, when you still had an Isaiah Livers there.
Right, yes, exactly.
You had an older guy like, you know, yes, Franz Wagner, technically only a sophomore, but playing-wise, beyond his years, and you still had some older guys. You brought in older transfers. And then this year you have 10 freshmen and sophomores, and your upperclassmen aren't only low in numbers, but they're low in usage.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Adrian Nunez is not a big-time guy, an upperclassman, but not in the rotation. Brandon Johns, not a particularly impactful player. It's Eli Brooks and a guy who is, yes, a senior in Devontae Jones, but also in his first year. So they are extremely young, and you could make the case that maybe they should have made more emphasis on being a little older this year. Like, if you want to talk about roster construction mistakes, maybe they could have brought in another guy, but they don't have a scholarship spot. They're won over with Eli.
Yeah.
So this, in a perfect world, you would have a Shaundi Brown type
That's
guy.
That's what they're missing,
in this group. And not only positionally, because they need help at the wing, he's right in that part of the question, but they also lack experience, they lack maturity, they lack an edge, they have lacked response to adversity, and those are things that older teams do, and that younger teams have to learn on the fly, and it's really freaking hard to do.
Who are their three? Who would we say are their three most talented players? Would we say it's, and not in order, we'd say it's Dickinson, Caleb Houston, and Moose Diabate, correct?
Talented.
In terms of just pure
talent.
Those three guys, right? Yeah. So Dickinson is an older player.
In theory. Caleb Houston is in theory.
In talent, I'm saying. Now, listen to me. Follow me here.
Yeah, I hear you.
So Dickinson's an older player who, and I watched a little bit of that game the other day, who looks like at least he's starting to understand what it means to play with, you know, full motor all the time, no matter what. Mm-hmm. No matter if you're getting, you know, triple teamed and they're not getting you the ball, your motor's still going. I saw some of that, I thought, from him. Diabate doesn't know how to play basketball. And Caleb Houston is still the guy who, you know, catches a pass on the wing in midair, doesn't land, and tries to take a dribble and turns the ball over. Just because you can do all those things and it looks awesome because he's such an athlete doesn't mean that it's going to work. This is a Big Ten, brother. Like, that's what I saw. I saw their two most gifted players still learning how to play, and their best guy maybe starting to kind of figure it out. And in some ways, like, if you can get the Brookses and those other guys you've talked about to kind of rise up to Dickinson's level while those two other kids figure it out, maybe you'll have something going. But, like, that's their issue that I saw was, like, these guys are just not college basketball players yet. They're not full, you know what I mean? They're not 30-minute yeah. college basketball players yet. 35-minute. Houston and Musa are not guys that you can reasonably put out there against a good sure. team for 35 minutes and not have a, you know, not be yeah. like, oh, how's this going to go? You know, like, that's the situation. That's what I saw.
And then, you know, kind of further on the roster construction part of this, like, the Diabate thing is interesting because in another world, Hunter Dickinson might have left.
Sure.
Last year.
Sure.
Right? And instead probably, you get Dickinson yeah. you get Dickinson back. Now you have Diabate coming in. Well, you want to play both of them. Mm-hmm. So now you have a guy who's not really naturally a college four right now mm-hmm. that you're trying to give him those minutes. Yeah, right. And I think the realization's pretty much set in that, yeah, you can play them together a little bit maybe here and there, but it can't be a primary
yeah.
lineup. It just doesn't
no.
work that
not
way.
Not yet.
Yeah. You know, Diabate can do some good stuff at the five and that he's certainly more natural in that position right now.
Yeah.
But they're kind of force feeding that
exactly.
look when they play them together.
Yes.
And then, you know, otherwise in terms of building things, like there probably wasn't enough of an emphasis on shooting. And obviously everyone thought Caleb Houston was going to be, mm-hmm. you know, an elite shooter. And he has not been. And because of that, I mean, the shooting numbers are just
well, yeah, and it's also
woeful.
Like you mentioned Sean D. Brown earlier, and clearly they're missing some mm-hmm. a presence of that ilk. And it's not just the position he played, but it's the guy who can get all the we call it hidden yardage in football, but it's the dirty stuff. You know, it's like he can if you scrape down on a ball and it's loose, you're getting it 9 times out of 10, not 6 out of 10. If Sean D's on your team.
So like, so much of
it. Yeah, like that's the difference, I think, for them right now, too.
The three guys who look at the three main guys they left. No disrespect to Mike Smith, but like Mike Smith was enormous in his role. But to the point I'm about to make, mm-hmm. I'm talking about Franz, Isaiah Livers, Sean D. Brown. All three of them gave you the two most important things, you could argue, in basketball. 3-point shooting and defensive versatility.
Yeah.
They could switch. They could guard multiple positions. They could do this. They could do that. And they could shoot. This team lacks both of those categories, and it's not rocket science to figure out why.
Yeah. I mean, that's premium. You're right. That's the premium thing you're looking for, more or less. But it's also something in college basketball that unless you are basically generational at 18 years old, it's going to take you 3 years to figure out the second part of that. And probably 100%. The first part. The shooting... Caleb Houston's probably still a good shooter. It's just like...
Oh, it's in there.
This is not, you know, this is not an AAU game or whatever. It's mm-hmm. very different. And like, that's what I saw, is a kid still learning how to play basketball. Really talented. Right. Oh my God. Because he made one play where he left, he caught a pass on the wing on one beeline, would have been like, get him out of the game and never put him back in. Because he caught it on one foot and then did the thing where he goes to the baseline, then gets up in the air and freezes and then just like lobs the ball, no look, and it was a turnover. And you're like, well, that was horrible. And then like two trips down, he goes baseline again and then no looks like a dunk to somebody. And you're like, holy shit. You're like, okay, well, that was really good too. So it's he'll be fine, you would think, right? But it's like, it's probably going to take a while. It's just not going right. to be immediate. And that's your answer there, yeah.
I mean, look at Duncan Robinson. Like Dylan and I have talked about this, and I've talked to people on the staff about it. And you know, I remember his last year
mm-hmm.
at Michigan. He entered his senior year as a career 44% 3-point shooter. So that's pretty goddamn good for a college player. And his first 12 games.
Yeah.
He was shooting 32% on threes, and at one point in a 7-game stretch, he went 9 for 39.
Could not make a shot. Yeah.
23%. He couldn't make mm-hmm. a shot. And that was him as a senior. And this was the same guy who, as a sophomore,
the first half of the year,
yeah. was shooting 60%
yeah, right.
in the first half of his sophomore year. And it looked yeah. like he was going to break every record in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him that year asking Duncan, and I don't know if I asked the question or someone else did, and he just kind of snipped at it, but someone was like, you know, you're in this slump, and he finally had enough, and he was just like, you know, no disrespect to you or fans or anybody else, but there's no such thing
as slumps. Yeah, right.
Right, and he went all into it, and I wrote a big thing about it, but Part of the whole Caleb Houston thing is remembering that.
Right.
Historically, his numbers, when you look at high school and you look at grassroots basketball, when you look at his USA basketball stuff, across the board,
yeah,
he is a 40% plus
volume shooter,
high caliber volume 3-point shooter. He just hasn't made them. And there's a, you know, the one of the good things for Michigan when they're like, hey, how do you turn things around? You're like, well, at some point, this goddamn guy, he might go and shoot 60%.
He might have to hit some shots. Yeah, there you go.
Over eight games, you know, and you get hot in those
games.
That's
the greatest
point.
Playing
NCAA teams. You can get wins, and suddenly you're back in the picture.
It's the best point. I always remember, and we just talked to Stu the other day on his podcast, but Stu Douglas, I'll never forget this. It was like the very beginning of his senior year, and he, like, his first, like, three or four games or whatever it was, he couldn't make a shot. And someone asked him that slump question. He was like, no offense to any of you here, but I'm not doing it with you. Like, because he knew. At the time, you know, I didn't probably click it at the time, but I think he knew, like, over my life in basketball, I am an X percentage shooter. I will be at the end of this year as I continue to do the things I have always done. You know, he was a pro at that point in his life, and he understood that. And you have to get to that point in college, especially as a shooter, I think, and as we've learned over the years, to really... Some guys get it earlier, but I think for Stu, that was one where he'd probably even tell you later in his career, I think that did click for him, where he was like, I'm not doing this thing where I worry about I had three bad ones or whatever, because at the end of the day, it's all going to be the same. Like, it just is. And you're right. That's the greatest point to learn. And for an 18-year-old or 19-year-old, it's hard to wrap your head around.
I have a Michigan State hoop story from Motor City Spartans podcast. What are your thoughts on Tyson Walker being more aggressive? Past teams with, for example, Lucas and Cassius always seemed like when the half-court offense was in flux, there was a point guard who could go get a bucket. I would like to see Tyson be more aggressive from deep and penetrating. Yeah, I think so much of this has been a guy just trying to find comfort level on when to use the bullets that he has and when to incorporate guys. And so much of the offense is based on setting up basically spot shots for high-level shooters, Gabe Brown one wing, Max Christie the other wing, or doing pick-and-pop actions with a Joey Hauser, right? Like, there is not much in Michigan State's offense that is, as anyone knows who watches them, right? This is not a go freelance, you know, go score, or and they don't have a Nick Ward that you're feeding in the post, you know?
You gotta earn
it. When you're the guy, kind of driving that ship, that takes
not a lot of room for
adjustments
error there,
too. Yeah. They've played 17 games, and I don't think he's quite there yet. But you know, part of this is a guy who his role kind of requires being the leader, and it's hard as a transfer, I think. And I think it's easy for us to forget that guys don't sit out a year
especially
anymore,
especially in a place like that, you know.
Right. I mean, he walked in and you know, being tasked with taking over a point guard position that, A, had a point guard. You know.
Yeah.
A.J. Right. Hogard was there. But I do agree with there are times where Walker probably needs a little more alpha to him and have that confidence to go get a bucket here and there. That, you know, that said, he's shooting 34% on twos.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not a guy who has this great mid-range games and can be teardropping in floaters. He's not Cassius Winston.
Right.
But, you know, whether it's going and drawing a foul or being willing to, you know, call your own number for three, that's a thing. But at the same time, he is little. He's a small guy.
Yeah, he's not a big guy, and this is a hard league. Yeah.
Whether it's scoring in the paint or even having
not
room
impossible,
to pull,
but yeah.
Or even having room to pull up for the three. You know, when you need it. Like, there are still bigger guards in this league that'll just send that shit.
But little guys in this league can figure it out. But again, it takes time. It takes time, and you got to play. You know, like, so I got to boogie, my man. This is my last question. I got to wrap.
Oh, okay.
But right. In any event,
I realized we were up on it.
We got to go short this week. We'll give you an extra 15 next week, ladies and gentlemen.
That's fair. Do we have any that we need to hit? What was the sandwich question?
Oh, I don't know.
Hold on. Let me see if
okay,
I can.
Okay, let's
find
wrap
it
up on the sandwich question. Somebody said something about.
Sorry.
Was it Philly steaks or was it.
No, it was the.
Some other.
Here. I got it. Here we go.
Look up on mine here. You got it?
Yes. Okay, first of all, real quick, what's an event or an arena that you have yet to experience but is high on your list as a fan or wanting to cover it? What do you got?
Oh, man. The Super Bowl.
That's a good one. Okay.
But also, like a stadium, you know, the stadium that the Giants, and I don't even like baseball, the stadium the Giants play in, San Francisco, where Bonds would always hit the ball out into the water, I want to sit at like the highest point above home plate, behind home plate.
Dig that.
Right there. That'd be a cool place to watch a game.
My event would be the Open Championship at St. Andrews, preferably. And I think that might be happening this
okay. I was going to ask.
Summer, folks. arena.
Fingers crossed.
My bucket list has been pretty taken care of in
college basketball
arenas.
Yeah, right.
But the two I have, Allen Fieldhouse is still sitting there.
Yeah,
which
been
is
there
just
either.
Shocking.
I have to get Austin to give you a secret tour someday.
And I really want to see the Pit.
Oh, yeah, New Mexico. That'd be a good one. Yeah, for a jump-in game there. They're all good there, right?
That question was from Aaron, and his one was, what's the – this is an important question. What's the delineation between a sandwich and a hoagie? I never know what to call it out here. So my thought on this, anything that's a sandwich, so, you know, wheat bread, like a regular slice of bread,
a club roll,
I don't even know what
that
Kaiser
is.
Roll, those are sandwiches.
You guys in
Once you get into
there,
any
man.
Long roll over 6 inches, I will say, is the delineation. Any long roll 6 inches that is cold is a hoagie.
Okay.
In my mind.
Okay. I can't argue because I don't know what that even means. Like
Nick has to go to BTN and
we'll get you
a smiling face. I'm glad that you dressed up for your TV.
I
got to
go
too,
change
Nick.
My shirt really quick. That'll be good.
All right.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Tip your bartenders. Tip your servers. We love it. I've seen hard times all my days.